Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Film Pigs podcast. Oh, man. I started it like I always do, and it's boring.
What?
I should have done like a... Let me redo it.
Were you going to like... You're going to jazz it up?
Yeah. Give me a sec. Let me try it.
All right.
Let me try it.
Yeah,
like,
no,
so
no,
start
this,
from the...
This ought to be special.
Yeah. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Film Pigs podcast. I am Film Pig Todd Robert Anderson, and we're here to soothe your ears with talk of movies. I'm here with Film Pig Stephen Skelton.
Is this like supposed to be like an easy listening kind of thing, or
shh. Stephen Skelton. Stephen Skelton and I are doing
Steely Dan.
Stephen Skelton and I are doing a very special episode of The Bacon. Stephen Falk is not available as he has family obligations. This is maybe the third Bacon episode in a row, and a lot of people who like a more refined version of the podcast where there are multiple segments and all those things are dealt with are going to be upset. But
it's a pandemic.
It's a pandemic. Stephen Falk has family obligations, and here we are. Stephen Skelton and myself, Todd Robert Anderson, to talk about a very particular subject. Steve Skelton, before we get into it, how are you?
I'm doing okay. I'm working a lot, which is good. Better than not working a lot, but it is lots and lots of hours. So it's consuming a lot of my time. I kind of went from in the middle of the pandemic for like months of sitting on my couch in my underwear playing Xbox with no job to a job where there's no longer time to play Xbox.
That's terrible. When was the last time you played Xbox?
It's just the other day, actually. It was not. I mean, I have some time. I was being...
You're just not playing Xbox all the
like
time.
For 10 hours a day.
Yeah. I get you.
At peak pandemic, you know, my daily schedule revolved around, you know, how much Xbox I was going to play for the day and if I thought I might at some point feel like taking a break from Xbox to look at some internet porn.
My
schedule.
I don't consider myself to be out of the pandemic. I know some people do, other people don't. It's all cool. Whatever your personal subjective thing is, I'm not judging that. For me personally, I feel like I'm still within the pandemic. And
well, it's still a raging global threat.
Yeah.
So.
And I remain terrified of it. Mostly I remain terrified of you because I'm half faxed. Where are you at? Are you?
I'm half faxed.
You're half faxed. I'm half faxed.
Which one? What flavor did you get? I got Dolly's.
I got the Moderna.
Yeah, it's the Dolly. It's the Dolly
special.
Is that
the Dolly?
Yeah.
The elitists say that the Pfizer one is better. The elitists. Like, that's a thing that's happening now. I got Pfizer. Oh, you got Moderna. You're a loser. Oh, my God, you're getting the one jab. Oh, you're the worst. You're the worst. And
right, when in reality, ultimately, all of them do the most important thing, which is prevent you from developing the symptoms that kill you.
Yeah.
So
I was angling for the Johnson & Johnson, and mine came up right at the time that Johnson & Johnson was getting suspended.
Oh, because of the few incidents,
six incidents of blood clots in women. But I was all for the Johnson & Johnson because I know it's only like, what is it, like 78%? You know, efficacy or
right,
whatever it is.
But it's like, it's not like 78% in the wild. It's like those percentages are then within the population. The math is actually, it's like that 70% is actually way better than it sounds.
Right. Exactly. And it's one shot. So I would have taken that. And I have multiple friends who've who got the Johnson & Johnson before it was suspended, and it's back now. But
it's back, baby.
I'm a little bit jealous of those folks because they just get the one jab. I have to go back and get another Moderna jab that apparently will make me sick for 3 days. So
yeah, I have to go back up to San Fernando in a couple of weeks to do that.
Yeah, and I got mine through my fucking union health plan. Thanks, SAG-AFTRA. But I had to, there was nothing in my area, so I had to go to Santa Clarita to get my first jab, but they shut down that site in Santa Clarita.
So, oh, really?
So, and all of Santa Clarita is closed for that shit, so now I have to go to Calabasas. It's bananas, and I had a...
I hope the San Fernando site stays open for another couple of weeks so I can get that there, because that at least is like, it was just like a 15-minute drive up the freeway, so it wasn't that bad.
Well, I mean, if you have your... Do you have your second...
I have my appointment, yeah.
You have your appointment, so it won't change. I mean, they literally changed it for me when I was there.
Oh, before you had your second appointment
I was at the second appointment, first appointment, rather, and they immediately said... One, I was told I was going to get the Pfizer. I don't care, but I showed up and it was Moderna, and then they were also like, and we're shutting down this site, so you're going to have to go to Calabasas or, you know, Playa del Rey or random places. So I'm going to Calabasas on May 13th, and I expect to feel sick that entire weekend. That's what I'm expecting.
Yeah, no, I've actually scheduled time off from work that Thursday and Friday, because I get it on the Wednesday afternoon. So I just said, you know what, I'm going to, because the Moderna one, I don't know if the first one for you, my arm was pretty sore the day after.
Yep.
And then I had like a little fatigue and a little bit of a headache for 2-3 hours in the middle of the day. So I just took a nap on the couch. And then I felt fine. So I figured like, oh, okay, I'm going to probably get it pretty good with the second one is what I'm planning on. So I was just like, okay, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and schedule that time off anyway, because if by some miracle I don't get wiped out by it, then awesome, 4-day weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't have that choice. I mean, if I get a job on May 14th, you know, I'm going to take it. I'm going to go and feel terrible. But I'm just wondering if that happens and I'm running a slight fever, which my wife did. And, you know, my wife and I are middle-aged, so when she runs fevers, it's not necessarily, you know, viral on any level. She's going through things. So, I'm just wondering, like, in those days after, if I'm feeling like shit and you have, like, cold and flu symptoms, will I be hot? And if I am hot the day after, like on the 14th, if I have a job, am I going to get screwed out of the job because I'm
well, possibly, but I mean, what you'd want to do in that case though is a tough question, because if you ahead of time, if you say, hey, that's when we're shooting, awesome, I'm getting my second shot the day before, so I might, you know, have the fever and stuff, but it's not.
Right. Well, the jobs
COVID.
The jobs that I maybe have coming up. Well, actually, the only time I know I'm working before I get the jab is on the 4th. But even so, they know I'm half. I'm honest with everybody. I'm like, this is my thing, and here's my thing, and here's my next date, and I would like to not fuck with that. You know, it's our mutual friend Lombardo, booked a job. He's shooting up in Toronto. He's been one jabbed, but they pushed up his travel dates, so he's leaving tomorrow. His second jab's not for another several weeks. So I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's a month between jabs.
Yeah. I don't know if he's gonna, but he's supposed to be up in Toronto for several months. So I don't know.
Oh, really?
I don't know what that means. Like, will he have to come back here? Will he have to fly back? But he can't, because there's 2 weeks of isolation on either end of this job.
Yeah, he's just going to have to get the second one up
late.
There.
Yeah, up there, hopefully. Yeah.
Well, I don't think you'd want to get it late because then it loses its effectiveness.
Yeah, so, yeah.
But
I don't know what
the logistics of that, I don't know.
Well, internationally, too. I don't know what. Yeah. Every country has different.
It's Canada, jabs. So it might be a little easier, you know, in terms of just like, oh, yeah, we're neighbors, basically. So it might be a little easier to go, oh, you got whichever one he got. Okay, we'll get you scheduled for the second of those in the proper area. Because that's also in the best interests of immunity.
Yeah.
Right? To just not be stingy. And just go, yeah, okay, you got your card, okay, that's when you got, you know, if he's got his card, he can go, yeah, it's not valid in Canada, but this is when I got the first one.
Right, and certainly...
So you know when I should get the second one.
Yeah, and Canada should want to make that happen
mm-hmm.
if they're allowing him to work in the country.
Yeah, it seems like if they're letting him in, then there's a provision to... Hey, if you've only got half the vaccination, you can get the other half up here while you're here.
Yeah, absolutely. And
well, I'm glad we straightened that out.
Yeah, I am too, and I think it's important that we did because you know we're talking about this, and we all get feeling sick if we have a jab, one or the other. I mean, like I've only had the one Moderna jab, and it did not make me feel good the next day. I had like good, not 48 hours, but 36 hours of not feeling great.
See, I didn't have, I just had that the day after that afternoon, and then I was okay.
And then you were okay. I felt pretty bad for a while. And my wife got the Pfizer, and her second one, you know, she was fucked up. I mean, she was, Hillary does not nap. She naps not. It's not her thing. But that particular day.
It's so my thing.
Oh, no, I'm a big napper. But she.
Yeah, I love this. Nothing I like better.
She does not nap. And that day, she slept for like 4 hours in the middle of the day. So, like, I'm expecting, which is great because the 13th is a Thursday. So I'll get that. And then Friday, I'll feel like shit. And then I have the whole weekend to feel like shit. And then.
That's the only thing I'm looking forward to is if I get a lot of symptoms. Then I just get to lay on the couch for a couple of days.
Yeah,
that's awesome.
And watch TV.
Yeah,
and maybe some movies.
Yeah, so, I can't. Like, I'm actually really looking forward to like the fatigue and headache and fever and just Netflix all day long.
Yeah.
Can you get more than the two shots?
I don't want to, you know, I've been accused of oversharing a lot in the last number of days with the various podcasts and internet shows that I have that nobody pays attention to. But earlier this week, I had a medical procedure done that elder people get on the reg to find out if they have cancer in their digestive systems.
Yeah, no, I got it. I think that's coming up for me in this next year.
Yeah. Well, the whole reason I did it, I'm only 49, and 50's the age where if you walk into your general practitioner's office, especially as a man, they'll go, okay, you have to do this. It's time.
Yeah.
And some people say, oh no, now it's 45. Every doctor I've talked to, like I've heard that so many times. I'm like, I'm hearing it's 45 now. And they're all like, no, it's still 50. Calm down. But I have a hiatal hernia and it causes, you know, acid reflux difficulties and it's been bad lately. So I was talking to my gastroenterologist and she said, you know what? I think we should do an upper endoscopy and look into it. Maybe stretch out your esophagus. Cause that's one of the things they do when they go down.
Oh, I thought she was going to say stretch out your butthole.
No. It's esophagus, upper. Endoscopy.
Right. Oh, okay.
Yeah, the colonoscopy only happens.
I'm not a medical doctor.
No, I understand that, and I appreciate your concern, but the thing about this is I had to get the upper endoscopy to check on you know, an actual condition that I have. But when you're 50, you get the colonoscopy regardless of how well you feel.
Right.
So because I'm 49 and I was getting that, I was like, well, should I just get, since I have to get this next year,
just do the full spit roast? Or
yeah, I did the full spit roast. I did it. And the worst part about it is, and, you know, guys who are middle-aged and everybody who's young, I apologize deeply for talking about this. It's horrible that you have to listen to this because you don't have to deal with this. But
in a movie podcast,
it's
like, when did this become like a elder care medical podcast?
Well, it's all leading up to the
like
movie.
Like a preparing for end of life medical care podcast.
Well, eventually we'll get to why this coincides with our love of movies. Yeah, but
sure we will.
But I think, I mean, this is a first act situation. You know, before we get into the second act, we need to set up so people care about our movie opinions. Why?
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure everybody really cares. This is real good act one.
You know, your negative attitude isn't helping. It's not helping.
I have notes.
Well, everybody does. That's my life. Everyone I know has fucking notes about the choices I make. And it's fair. I've made bad choices, and I continue to make them. But I'm going to have a sip of my scotch. But the point is, you have to do this thing. So I had to do this thing. And the worst part about it is not the actual procedure. It's what leads up to the procedure. It's the preparation. Or as they say in the gastroenterology biz, it's called the bowel prep.
In the G-biz?
In the G-biz, it's called the bowel prep. And you know, I'm going to be frank with the listeners. So if you are triggered by bowel trouble, you know, like pause this, fast forward a couple minutes. But bowel prep means that you take medicine that makes you have horribly explosive diarrhea for 12 hours.
You don't need medicine for that.
No, I don't. Normally, I just have it.
You're like, whoa, can I save a couple of bucks on this procedure? This is just,
you need to know
I already got this part covered.
You need to know for sure that I have the diarrhea. You can't just say it. So yeah, so that was like, I started at 3 p.m. in the afternoon. I did not sleep the entire night. And then, you know, on Tuesday morning, I had to get up and go get, you know, spit roasted. But what got me through the nightmare was watching movies.
It's all coming full circle.
See what I'm saying? So
yeah.
For the last year, all of us have been sequestered on some level, whether we be Republican or Democratic, conservative or liberal, we've all had certain things encroached on us. We've not been able to go out. We've been stuck inside. And some of us have gotten sick, and some of us have gotten depressed, and some of us have had all these different problems as a result of this pandemic, however you feel about it. And a lot of people turn to entertainment as comfort. And I think if you're a TV person, you can turn to a new TV show that has some elements of comfort that you like. You can watch Law and Order, right? Or I just heard they're rebooting CSI just in time for the end of the pandemic. William Peterson's going to be back.
They're rebooting the original recipe CSI.
Yeah, and they're getting as many of the original cast members. So you see what I'm saying about comfort food? I mean, CSI already, like when it was on in its heyday, it was comfort food. It's perfect. Like, you know, there's a crime and there's the characters you love who figure out the crime and they figure it out. And by the end of the hour, you're good. Everything's great. So and then there are people like me who are movie people who turn to movies. God damn it, Burroughs. That's my cat. He's meowing. He wants to get out. we turn to movies, but the thing is about movie people is we're not going to turn to a genre. We may turn to a franchise that we love if there's something new. If we're lucky enough that there's a new Fast and the Furious or a Friday the 13th or a James Bond movie or whatever franchise we love. If we're lucky enough, there's a new one, we can turn to that comfort. But for the most part, when you're a movie lover and you go for comfort food, you turn to the things you're familiar with. So just tonight, my family and I were watching The Sure Thing, which is a movie I've seen a million times before. Yep. And even my son, when I put it on, was like, oh, God damn it, I've seen this 1,000 times already. My son.
And you're immediately, you will see it again.
And you will watch it, and you haven't seen it 1,000 times. That's wrong. That's wrong
but,
math.
But your punishment is you will now see this movie 1,000 times.
Yes, from right now and in perpetuity. Like, you have to watch all 1,000
yeah.
viewings.
This
right
is
now.
The only thing you can watch until you've seen it 1,000 times.
No video games.
Yeah.
No books. Nothing until
no
you've seen
no learning.
No new.
In fact, I'm pulling you out of school.
You're out of school.
So you can watch The Sure Thing full time 1,000 times in a row.
Which is good parenting. That is,
it's just good parenting.
It's just solid parenting. So I thought for our bacon episode tonight, and again, you know, I had a full planned, segmented, full show, but Steve Falk has family obligations. That's not true. I mean, it is true that he has family obligations. It's not true that I prepared something.
That you were prepared in any way for an actual regular podcast.
No. I would have been if the pressure had been laid
if
on
there'd me. Been an, yeah, the, you would have been panic-induced into half-ass preparing
yeah.
A bunch of segments. And,
yeah.
Like we always do.
But Steve was unable to attend, so therefore I did not have to prepare anything. So in that spirit,
well, you couldn't tell it by the show so far.
We're 22 and a half minutes in, and I think
and we've mostly been talking about your medical procedures.
But it's a movie podcast. So anyway, I'm watching The Sure Thing. The other day I watched, when I was having my bowel prep, you know, I didn't know
the B prep.
The B prep, and I knew it would be horrifying because everybody said this is horrifying. It's awful, and it is. It's terrible. There's no way around it. It's awful. But what would comfort me the most, you know? And for a minute, I was like going onto Netflix and Amazon and finding some stuff either that I hadn't finished or that I was curious about. And I saw the last half of a movie called Hunter Hunter with Devon Sawa. Is that his name? From the first Final Destination. Devon Sawa.
Oh.
Yeah, that guy.
I think so. You're close. You're close anyway.
I'm pretty sure it's Devon Sawa or Sawa. I don't know how you say his name. And then the other guy was, shit, I always forget his name. He's the guy in the third Terminator movie. And he
Wait,
was in that.
That's the Mostow directed one. Yeah.
So
Yeah. That's, damn it.
Nick? Is his name Nick? No.
It is
Nate.
Hold on. No, because he was also in the Sin City sequel.
Yes, and he was in that show, that HBO show that I liked.
Yeah, you
called
keep talking
Carnival.
For a second. I'm gonna look it up because it's right on the tip of my tongue and it's making me nuts.
Anyway, so these two guys. It was interesting, certainly on the level of it's these two guys, who both like torpedoed their own careers through substance abuse, as I understand it. The guy from Terminator 3 was like...
No, it's Nick Stahl.
Nick Stahl, yes, thank you. So yeah. Nick Stahl literally had like such a abuse problem that he like went on walkabout on these things. He disappeared. and there were multiple missing persons. So he was messed up. Devin Sawa screwed up his career the same way, being fucked up. So it was cool to see that they're back. You know, it's like a Robert Downey Jr. in Iron Man, except it's a low budget.
Yeah, yeah.
A horror movie, and it was just good to see them because I, in a weird way, because I think they're both very good actors, and this is a horror survival movie that isn't about them. It's about the lead character is a woman who's married to Devin Sawa's character, and then they run into Stahl's character, and it was very, very good. Very entertaining. The first half of it is a bit slow, but when you get to the second half, it's insanely good. But I was watching it, and all these elements of it gave me some level of comfort, but it didn't give me the comfort that I needed.
Right.
So when it was over, I put on LA Story, the Steve Martin movie, and I was sort of blown away by the fact that I had never seen this this thriller movie that I was watching with these people before, and I'd seen LA Story a million times before, and the difference was my time get eaten up so quickly and so magically by LA Story. I know these are two totally disparate movies, and it's weird to compare them, but
it's extremely weird.
But do you understand what I mean in that, like, when I'm watching the LA Story, and I don't know if it's nostalgia or just it's like a better told story, but the hour and a half that went by that I had to eat up.
Well, it's probably a much better movie in general.
It is a better movie in general, but the hour and a half that I had to eat up with that versus the other thing, it made the time go so much faster. And when you're suffering with the various things that bowel prep requires, anything that makes the time go faster is better.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't dislike this B movie horror thriller at all. I liked it, but LA Story was the comfort food I needed to get me through that. So after
I think it's
happened,
also like in that type of case, you know, when you're dealing with a B prep, something like an LA Story, which is, you know, from your perspective, also a beloved film, and a classic comedy, and it's something that, you know, you're very familiar with, but you also like seeing again and again, you know, because it's, you see something maybe a little bit new or a little bit different, even though you know what the beats are and what's coming, your time is gauged in a different way with a movie that you find comforting in those couple of respects, where it's like, you know that time has been blocked off safely,
yeah,
like kind of in your head. Mm-hmm. and then on top of it, if it is something like a, you know, like an LA Story, where you can watch that movie a dozen times and find new things that you hadn't seen before as well.
Yeah, that's a big deal, I think.
Because I remember very vividly, and I haven't seen LA Story in some years, but it was like one of the times after I, you know, been in LA for a long time, I watched it again. And I remember catching for the first time, and I'd never caught it before, the moment outside of the restaurant where they're talking about exchanging phone numbers, and they're talking area codes.
Yeah.
And when what's his name says, "Oh, I'm an 818," and then the valets behind them laugh at him.
It's not, actually, I just watched it the other night. It's not even 818. It's just like he says, "Oh,
he says, no, I'm in the valley.
That's so much more better because I live in the valley," and all the valets laugh.
Yeah. 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 And they just,
it's so funny.
Just, yeah, you can find little bits like that. They're just thrown away. They're just part of the landscape of the whole of the whole world. That it's just absolutely hilarious. So.
And tonight, so I'm watching The Sure Thing with my family, and when my son said, "Jesus, Dad, I've seen this movie 1,000 times," like my kid's 15, he's not seen this 1,000 times.
Yeah,
but it's in his head. So we obviously go back to this a lot for comfort food, probably around the Christmas season, not necessarily the springtime because it's a Christmas set, movie, but like that sort of made me happy. And then he complained about it, but then was instantly into the movie and charmed by it and went with all the bits. Like, we know all the bits, you know, the credit card bit and the hitchhiker bit, all the bits are like, we know them by heart. I do. My wife does. We can do all the dialogue by heart. My son, even though he is not of our generation, knows it very well now too, despite I don't think he's seen it really as many times as he thinks he has. But there's something awesome about stuff like that, The Sure Thing, like a lot of early Rob Reiner movies, even like Spinal Tap makes me happy, The Sure Thing makes me happy, When Harry Met Sally makes me happy. These movies that are 90 minutes to 100 minutes maybe in general, they are comfort food. And you're right. There's like, you know where it's going. You know the finite amount of time that you have to hang out with it. But it's something like, there's something special about those moments always resonating, no matter how many times.
Yeah, comedy-wise, for me, I go to like Lost in America and Defending Your Life, the two.
Oh, sure. Yeah, those are great.
In the same way, because those are such perfect, brilliant comedies. But they're also, you know, somehow something that also works really well when you just, like, are on the couch and don't want to go anywhere or can't go anywhere. But in a lot of the same way, too, because it's like, yeah, I know all the bits. You know, all of the...
Real life, you know, for you, me, too,
all the
like
dialogue,
Albert,
you know, all
Brooks,
the,
yeah.
It's Desert Inn with heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Desert Inn has heart.
Yeah.
We're finished talking, Gary Marshall.
Well, and Real Life for me, too, is another Albert Brooks movie that works for me. There's a lot of... I mean, there's, you know, filmmakers from the 80s, 70s and 80s especially, that I can return to certain movies. I mean, like... And some of them don't... Like, they don't work for my kid anymore because they're not, there's too much of them that haven't aged well and aren't, you know, politically correct or
well,
woke.
There's like most like really broad 80s comedies are now, they were then, but it's absolutely clear now that they are essentially just the crime portion of an episode of Special Victims Unit in their structure and plot and, you know, the events that take place. Like, Revenge of the Nerds is just a series of sex crimes.
Yeah, yeah. No, all of the...
Like, it's a horror show.
Yeah, all the sex movies, sex comedy movies from the 80s are horrible. I mean, Animal House is horrible if you break it down. I mean, one of the central bits in it is child rape.
Oh, yeah, it was the end. Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, at the time, I guess it was hilarious, and I certainly laughed at all the things. But, I, the stuff that's exploitative in Animal House is not the stuff that made me laugh. It's not seeing a naked pair of boobs and making a joke about it.
No, you do
that.
That
made me
you
laugh.
Do that in Stripes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's Stripes too. Yeah, they're all dicey. It's all dicey. But I'll watch Stripes till
I'm dead.
The
nudity in Stripes is almost justified by John Larroquette's brilliant performance with the telescope.
I wish I was a loofah.
Yeah, and it's like, oh, I didn't know they could do that. Yeah, that's like, which had to all be like just like ad libs, where he's clearly like he's just on set somewhere, like looking at nothing.
Shitty, shitty perversions made funny by male actors in the '80s is so integral to '80s comedy, especially the R-rated stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like even Police Academy had the whole, and I love Police Academy. I love Porky's. I love these movies that are terrible because I grew up with them and they were things that I could get at that I wasn't supposed to as a Catholic boy. So they were giving me things that I didn't get, and they presented them poorly, granted, but at least they were presenting them where I wasn't getting it anywhere else. But yeah, so there's a comfort food in the politically incorrect, I think, for our generation, which is weird. And
I think it's more ultimately a nostalgia. When you look at like a Revenge of the Nerds or a Police Academy, it is a little bit more of a nostalgia because those were also like big hits.
Yeah. Well, and like
they were big hits from our childhood that we didn't necessarily see in the theater because we were too young.
I saw Police Academy in the theater only because an upperclassman when I was a freshman, I think. In high school, an upperclassman was an usher at a theater and said, I can get you into Police Academy. And everybody loved Police Academy. It was like, I want to go. So I got snuck into it by an usher who worked there. And the thing, the whole reason I went to see Police Academy was not to have a laugh. The whole reason I went to see Police Academy when I was the age I was in Massachusetts was to see a naked lady. That's it.
Right.
That's why I went. And I was amused by the movie.
Yeah, we had no internet.
No.
We had none of that.
If you wanted to see a naked lady. So
didn't have a phone. You could just call up naked boobies on whenever you wanted to.
Give me boobies.
Yeah. Siri, I'm a teenage boy. I can't control my hormones.
Give me boobies. Yeah, so, I saw that and the whole nudity sequence in that movie is all it is a campfire on a beach. And the comic bit of it is Tackleberry's face. He's playing saxophone, Tackleberry. Playing saxophone. And then
I know Tackleberry played the saxophone.
Right. So he's playing saxophone by the fire. And then the ladies start taking their tops off. I don't know why. Just because the saxophone is good.
It's just a dumb gag.
Right. But and it's just he's just
like
his
this,
eyes.
So his saxophone playing is so erotic.
That they take off their shirts. And then his face, he makes these wide-eyed expressions like, which is what you do when you see breasts, right? That's what we all do. So, I don't know. That is politically incorrect and wrong-headed. But when I watch Police Academy, it gives me comfort to remember being a horny early adolescent and getting to see these movies I wasn't supposed to see, there's like a comfort in that.
Yeah.
For me. And I, in the last number of days, I've found a lot of comfort in old crappy movies, not just those, but like Back to the Future and shit like that.
Oh yeah, well my big go-to comfort movies are the original cast Star Trek movies.
Oh, I was just talking about that today.
Yeah, all one, motion picture through 6.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a big Star Trek fan, but also B because like if you look at like movie franchises and the way franchises normally function, through getting into the 80s when they really became a big thing, and then as they evolved into the 90s and the 2000s and beyond, most franchises you have your movie that's successful, and then you do another one that's almost exactly like the movie you just did, because that was the formula that worked, and so on with diminishing returns, typically until it just peters out. What's awesome about the Star Trek, the original cast, Star Trek franchise, is how scattershot it is. but it's because it's not because of some bad choices and some, you know, dumb, you know, ideas, but the core though was, if you actually break it down, it's arguably the gutsiest movie franchise of all time, because every single one of those movies is a different style and a different genre, essentially. Like, motion picture is this long, plodding, like, Kubrick-esque space odyssey. Star Trek II is an action movie. They follow just up with an action submarine warfare, World War II kind of flavor. More like action thriller, probably, more is the correct.
I feel like on a certain level you're discounting the Puppet Master franchise, but
look, there's arguments to be made, but Star Trek III is a heist movie. Four is a family friendly comedy.
It's my favorite.
Yeah, and it's awesome. Five is the one William Shatner directed.
It's a mistake. It was a mistake, but it's lovely. It's a fun mistake.
It's such a crazy mess.
Yeah,
that it's still like it. Kind of fun, in just how clumsy it is. And then six is like a political thriller. It's like a Tom Clancy movie.
That's the one with the blue blood and the slow bullets or whatever.
It was Pink Blood.
Pink Blood. Thank you. Yeah, it's been a minute. It's been a while.
That's the one where Christopher Plummer is the bad guy who keeps quoting Shakespeare.
I like that. I like all those Star Trek movies a lot. The bad ones especially. I mean, like, the first one is so slow and plotting in its pacing, but it, especially they redid the effects.
They did a remastered. I don't know if it's called a director's cut or something else.
It's so great. The visuals are great.
On a technical level, it's so awesome. But yeah, but it's so long. It's ultimately kind of unwatchable because of how slowly paced it is.
I
still love it because that's actually a perfect like afternoon, I have a fever and I don't want to pay attention too hard to something movie. Star Trek the Motion Picture is absolutely perfect for that.
Yeah.
Because then you get little moments here and there that are really awesome. Like when he gets Dr. McCoy back on the ship for the first time and like DeForest Kelly shows up in like his 70s space shirt that's like open to the navel with his medallions and his full beard.
Yeah.
It's like he's an Allman Brother. Like beamed.
Looks like fucking Ted Cruz.
Yeah. And it's so awesome. And so you get stuff like that, which is, just hilarious fun. And then it drags for a while, but that's okay because you got a fever and you're going to doze off for 10, 15 minutes anyway.
It's perfect. It's a perfect doze come in and out of a movie.
Yeah. You can come in and out of it and you're like, you don't really miss a lot because the plot is super simple.
There's so many.
They're going to find this thing. Then they find it and then they like sit around in the thing for a while and then the thing goes away.
Well, and I find comfort like in the weirdest places, like B movies.
Of course, now it's a little harder to watch because of Stephen Collins, but.
Well, you know, there's no movie. There will never be a movie that exists where some piece of shit isn't involved.
Probably not. Yeah.
There's no way to get those people out. So I guess like I've been thinking about that a lot. You know, it's like when you watch old Mel Gibson movies or whatever. And I think to myself, well, Mel Gibson, while he was the lead in Payback, wasn't the only motherfucker who worked on Payback.
Yeah.
And the Brian Helgeland director's cut is awful, but the original theatrical cut that Mel Gibson put together is actually kind of awesome. So should I not watch that because it's Mel Gibson? Probably not. But Mel Gibson wasn't the only motherfucker involved in that movie. I mean, there was Greg Henry. There was Lucy Liu. There was, you know, just the actors. And there was an entire crew of people, and they all get money when these things get rewatched. So, and so does Mel Gibson. So I guess it's like a scale of, you know, who do you want to reward, not want to reward according
to the
movie.
Yeah, but you still watch current Mel Gibson movies.
I'm not going to comment on
that. You're taking
that.
The fifth on that? You're taking the movie fifth on...
It's not my fault if Joe Carnahan.
You watched that Santa Claus movie he did, right?
I didn't pay for it. I did right, not well. Pay for it. I stole it, but I did pay for the Carnahan, Mel Gibson, Vince Vaughn movie. I did. I paid for it.
Which one was that? Oh, that was like they were
dragged
like,
across
the,
concrete.
They're the corrupt cops who
yes.
do corrupt things because they're terrible people.
Yes. Yeah. They were, and, you know, weirdly, they were right-winger cops doing what right-winger cops should do. So it was accurate on that level. I don't know why you'd be on their side. It's a weird movie. It's a weird anti-hero movie because they're terrible people. But they exist in a world with other terrible people. So I don't know. I don't know. My point
is... It's probably ultimately just not a very good movie.
No, Dragged Across Concrete's not good. It's not. It's not. But I did
you
like...
You should have watched Star Trek IV instead.
I watched them both. And I will watch them both again. It's a thing that I have, you know.
My favorite part of Star Trek IV is, like, it's hilarious, but it makes absolutely no sense in the whole bit where Scotty and McCoy are talking to the guy in the industrial plant, trying to get like the materials they need to build the whale tank,
uh-huh.
And you know they're giving him they're talking about like the what is it. Transparent aluminum. That's the bit, which is hilarious because we have transparent aluminum now. That actually is a fucking thing. But they were, you know, they're like, oh, well, we'll give you the formula for that. Here, let me show you on the computer. And they make this big deal out of like, oh, you know, oh, look at this antique. But somehow, like, Scotty can use this, like, old, like, Apple IIe. You know, it has that classic bit where, you know, his computer, use the mouse, and he just talks into the mouse computer.
Computer.
Hilarious. Yeah, but then he starts typing, like, and I'm like, but they don't use keyboards. They don't use QWERTY keyboards on the Enterprise. You don't see anything. Like, how could they possibly do this?
No, it's like learning cursive. Like, they learned how to type when they were school kids. So that's
right.
How they know. Just same way
right.
We force our children to learn cursive, which...
But we don't anymore.
No. Well, some schools do.
A lot of schools have stopped, though. There's a lot of younger generation that don't even know what cursive is.
No, that's
which
true.
Which is fine, because what the hell is that anyway? Like, seriously. Why is cursive better than regular printing? I mean, this is
it's quicker. It's quicker.
Is it?
Versus
yeah, but you end up going so fast, you know, half the time, but then people can't read what you wrote.
It doesn't matter though. It's about the signature on the check. That's what it's about.
I'm just saying. I've never thought cursive was terribly useful.
No.
There, I said it.
No, it's
I'm
fair.
Taking a stand. I'm taking a bold and brave stand.
It's fair. I'm not going to argue with you, but I would recommend when you are over here at our house for people are vaccinated, we're hanging out, ask my wife about that. And what she thinks.
No, it's interesting because I form this extremely strong and immovable opinion. And I really have no idea where cursive, like, you know, where, you know, the history behind it or any reasons why it's something we might actually want to keep doing or need for some reason. Like, there could be very well good reasons, but I don't know what they are, and I'm still against it.
You know, that's cool. You have every right to feel that way. I just want to get us back on track as far as our baking topic.
Wait. You spent the first 22 minutes of this podcast talking about your medical butt stuff, and you want to get us back on track. Okay. Okay, Dr. Butthole. Let's put us back on track.
I just wanted to talk about, you know, comfort food, you know, cinematic comfort food. That's all. I just wanted to get us back to that. But you're right. I talked for a long time. I mean, I thought I was talking that way to get us into the comfort food, but then we've tangentially gone off on other things. I want to apologize to our listeners,
the medical community,
and the medical community, and really everybody, and our good friends, all of you, Shireen, Andy, Amy, all of you.
The good news is though is your butt results were positive, right? They weren't like.
Yeah, you know, no.
Like, hey, everything looks okay.
No, the great news is I went into the thing thinking I'm going to find out I'm dying, and I only have 6 months. And I went through the full thing. I went through the full nervous breakdown about having to say goodbye to my family and my friends and leaving this mortal coil. To you're fine, you know. And it's a weird. You know, journey to go through, because you go through the bowel prep, as we talked about before, which is, I mean, there's 2 days of not eating well, or I don't know if it's eating well, maybe eating better than normal, but, you know, cutting down on fibers, and then the final day where you just drink liquids and eat Jell-O, and then you take medicine that gives you horribly explosive diarrhea.
Yeah, no, I think we covered this in the first 20 minutes of this podcast, Todd. We don't.
Well, you brought it up again.
I didn't ask you for a redo.
Oh, I'm sorry. I mean, I thought you wanted a recap on how.
I thought you were going to put us back on track.
I was trying to, but you brought up the thing again. I was trying to bring it.
You gonna you're recapping all of your medical stuff again?
Yeah, but like the whole reason I brought it up in the beginning was to get us to the movies that give us comfort. But right. Then you brought us back to this. Like I was just trying.
I'm not forcing you to recount the B prep again.
No, nobody's forcing me to do anything. I was just. You know, you open this level of the conversation, and I just wanted to honor it on some level and not, you know, but we can move on. But the point is there's movies that I like that have helped me through these things, these moments. And we've all been in this pandemic for the last year, and I was just curious as to what titles that you've had in the last year that you've revisited from either your childhood or recent years or whatever. I mean, maybe two you things. Watch The Expendables again.
I like any movie that shows up from the 80s or 90s, like a low budget horror movie starring Jeffrey Combs.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what it is, whether it's like the one of the Reanimators or From Beyonds or, you know,
Castle Freak
or or there's a I forget what it's called. There's a there's a movie that started out as a Doctor Strange movie originally, like the Marvel Comics. And then I think in the middle of it, they lost their rights. So I think it's like Dr. Mordred or something.
Dr. Mordred.
And so they just kind of like scribbled over everything that said Doctor Strange and just said, let's just keep shooting. But it's basically Jeffrey Combs as Dr. Mordred, who spends most of the movie just kind of hanging out in his apartment complex and running into his neighbors.
Well, I mean...
And it's awesome. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
I love it.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Also, but for modern movies, though, I don't know. It feels like, because I've seen like two or three movies on Netflix that are, you know, mid-low-budge kind of sci-fi fares that have starred Anthony Mackie.
Oh, yeah. There is Synchronic.
There's at least
two. Synchronic?
Yeah, there's Synchronic, and which, that's the one where he's the robot?
No. Is he a robot? No, he's a robot.
In one of them, he's a robot.
He's a robot.
And then in
the other one,
there's like a balloon? A hot air balloon?
I think Synchronic has, I don't know. I can't remember, but Synchronic, he's not a robot. He's a robot in the other one.
Oh, it's something like beyond the wire or something.
Yeah, above the wire.
Yeah, that's the robot. That's the robot one.
Look out for the wire. It's called Look Out for the Wire.
Look out, Anthony. There's a wire.
Stop. Wire.
And none of the movies are, I mean, they're all kind of pretty much what you expect from kind of like a low-budge genre in terms of what the story is.
It's some Skyline-level bullshit.
Yeah. But I enjoy them because Mackie is good. Like, the robot one, like, the script is like, eh, but I think his performance is really good in it, and he's really charismatic in it, and that's what kind of makes it fun and watchable. So
yeah, Synchronic.
Like it seems like he's in a ton of these.
Yeah,
Netflix. And
well, there's a lot of people who are the straight to.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like they've like front loaded the Anthony Mackie movies in their library because of Falcon and Winter Soldier recently or
well,
what,
but also this summer, I mean, you've got actually this weekend there's one with Creed there. What's the actor?
Oh right, no, Michael B. Jordan. It's a Tom Clancy.
It looks great. It looks fantastic.
But is that Amazon?
Yeah, I think it's Amazon. Yeah. So there's that.
Well, I'll definitely watch that.
Yeah, there's tons of, and then there's like a Chris Pratt movie coming out in July on Amazon. I mean, who cares? I'm just saying, it's like people make a big deal about Chris Pratt now, but he's got a big budget.
His brother is reportedly a huge white supremacist, so I'm not sure about Chris.
Well, no, I was never sure about Chris. He's always been unapologetic, conservative, and gun nut, and didn't quite admit to being a Trumper, but of course he was. There's no way you can have those political leanings and not have voted for Trump.
Yeah, I think I give it even odds within the next 10 years he goes Gibson.
You mean he becomes offensive? Yeah.
Yeah.
He's on the cusp. I mean, the guy was on what's the right wing, the new, like, you know, they kicked Trump off of Twitter and there's a right wing social media thing. What's it called?
Parler. Oh, there's the Parler. Oh, he was on Parler?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Very public Parler account. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So, yeah, forget that. No.
Yeah. It's a bummer because he's fun and my kid loves.
Guardians. But there's at least three other Hollywood Chrises that are better than him. So,
yeah, there's tons of Chrises who are better, and
we got plenty of Chrises. We can lose one.
Luckily, I don't turn to anything with him in it as comfort food. I mean, I have my franchise comfort food. Like, I can watch a Friday the 13th movie or a Nightmare on Elm Street movie at any point and be happy. And the truth is, I can watch one of those dinosaur movies, including the ones with Chris Pratt, and be fine. None of them are good.
But they are good. I'm tired on the couch movies.
Yeah. You're tired on the couch. You don't feel well, or you're on some kind of pharmaceutical thing to make you feel better from whatever is not making you feel well. They're lovely. And they don't require anything of you. No emotional investment. You just watch. And it washes over you like a magical, you know.
Yeah.
Rainbow of colors. And I don't know. I don't know how much of what I saw in entertainment before the pandemic was really just that. And I think I just got good at it. So when the pandemic happened, I was like, I'm good. I don't know why everybody's upset.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, you know, there's, yeah, I hit a lot of the kind of comfort movies too. I had a lot of comfort TV shows too. Because
sure,
the pandemic is, you know, really conducive to binge watching.
Oh, yeah. And I have a 15-year-old kid. So like we can go, hey, you've never seen Dexter. And it's an excuse to rewatch all of Dexter, even the bad seasons, which we're in the middle of right now. And it's delectable. It's really good. I mean, it's interesting to watch shows you've seen a million times before that you like while you're watching newer shows, because Colby forces newer shows onto us. And Dexter, you know, we're only, you know, three seasons in at this point, but those first three seasons, really good.
Yeah,
really solid.
Lithgow season two or season three?
Three.
Yeah.
And then four. No. He's four.
Oh, he's four.
He's four and five, because it's the second season is Carradine. You know, he's the cop. Big guest star is Carradine, and it's the lady, the brunette British lady, who sets fire to stuff, is sort of the bad guy that he connects with. But Carradine's the big guest star. And then the third season, it's Smits.
Smits is Thursday. I was mixing up Smits and Lithgow's seasons.
And Lithgow's four, yeah. And I think that's when we lose.
I think also a lot with the comfort, if we're talking about like pandemic specific comfort stuff, I think a lot of it also has to do with like, you know, not any energy left to invest in something new sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, just that familiarity also is helpful. Just to, oh, yes, I've enjoyed this many times. I will enjoy it again now, and I don't have to think.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know where it's going to go. And if it's well done, if it's a good movie, then you don't get bored. It's weird. It's like if you go back and you watch an old movie that maybe it wasn't great. If you go back and you watch, like, you enjoyed Critters 3 the first time it came out, right? You had fun.
Who didn't?
Yeah. That was a fun movie. And then you go back and you watch it now, and you're just like, maybe it has some pacing problems.
Somehow, Critters 3 is not as good as I remember it. It's a real curveball.
I've seen Critters 3.
It's my
so
memory
many times.
Playing tricks on me is...
So many times I've seen Critters 3 and I can't tell you what it's about. I don't know what happened. I don't know. I can tell you, however, what happens in the movie. What's it called? Poison Rose? I just, like, the night before I had my medical procedure called a colonoscopy.
You're still in the just right at the tail end of your B prep.
It took me 3 hours to get through this movie that's an hour 40 minutes long, because every 10 minutes I gotta get up and go take care of biz. But I was watching this movie, and it's on Amazon Prime, I think, or something. It's called The Poison Rose. It stars John Travolta as a private detective who used to be a quarterback.
Oh, boy.
It's fucking straight up. What's that Jeff Bridges movie, Against All Odds? It's that.
Oh, God.
It's Against All Odds, except it's not Jeff Bridges when he's 28. It's John Travolta now that he's 74.
Oh, boy.
So he's like a guy who used to be a quarterback, and he was poised to be a star, and he had an injury, and it fell apart, and he had this sad thing in his Texas town.
I've already learned more about this movie than I care to.
It's not... I'm not going to say it's good, but...
I wasn't expecting that.
But it's got all these people. It's got Peter Stormare, right?
Uh-huh.
That's good. Famke Jamke is in it. Famke Jamke looks like her face has been stung by a million bees.
Yeah.
It's weird looking. And then it's got, and this is the thing that blew my mind about it, and I shared this on my favorite shitty movie last night, and Tracy, my co-host, said, I really think you overshare things, and you shouldn't talk about these things. But this movie blew my mind so much, in particular the Brendan Fraser performance, that when I woke up after my procedure, after being under general anesthesia, the first thing I said to my doctor was, I saw a movie with Brendan Fraser last night. And she's like, why? I didn't. Why would you bring that up? And I was just like, I don't know. It just stuck in my head. And he's very good in this movie, performance-wise. Hmm. His character work is bizarre. Like, the choices he makes are huge. He has a weird, like, lispy voice, and he's, like, ludicrously weird. But he's also looks like Brendan Fraser does right now, which is visually disturbing if you have ever liked Brendan Fraser or been a fan of Brendan Fraser, because he's been gone for a long time.
Yeah.
And he's not taking care of himself. He's been through some shit, and there's no reason that he should have taken care of himself, because as I understand it, you know, he's been sexually assaulted by major Hollywood personnel, you know, and he went through a horrible divorce where he lost most of it. And like, his story is the worst white man story I've ever heard. As far as, like, I don't think he did anything really bad himself. Like, I don't know what his interpersonal relationship with his estranged wife was, but she raked him across the coals financially. And he was sexually assaulted by a major Hollywood player. Yeah. And that's why he disappeared for so long. So to see him in this movie, he doesn't look good. He's like got like a major gut, and his face is weird. Like, it's like he's so big. It's like, I don't know how to explain it. He just doesn't look healthy. It's like one thing when you see a big character actor playing an unhealthy part, and you're like, oh, he's just playing that, you know, he's just playing it up, you know. But in this movie, Brendan Fraser just looks unhealthy. But he's also very, very good in the part he's playing. So that for me was really disturbing when I was watching it, and I was, you know, and I was into it. It's entertained. I watched the whole thing. John Travolta's terrible, but Brendan Fraser's really good, and the movie's like actually pretty good, and the cast is pretty amazing, you know, with all these people. And at the end of it, I was like, you know, I have to go to the bathroom every 15 minutes, and this is not working for me. And that's when I put on LA Story. LA Story made me feel a lot better. And that's the comfort food. I mean, and art shouldn't necessarily make you feel comfortable. And Poison Rose didn't owe me comfort. But after it was over, I had to watch something comfortable to make myself feel better in the place I was in.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's all I'm getting at with this particular Bacon episode is, I think we have all those, and sometimes it's weird. What's your weirdest? What's your weirdest comfort food, would you say?
Weirdest comfort food?
Like, I like Dark Star. John Carpenter's Dark Star.
Oh, yeah.
Is weird and low budge, but every time I watch it, it makes me laugh and it makes me feel good.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know so much about... I don't know if I got, like, a super weird... comforting movie. I'm trying to think of what that would be. I mean, I guess, nah.
I mean, I have franchises too. Like, I'll watch Tremors, any Tremors movie, and it'll make me feel okay. And some of them have Jamie Kennedy in them, but they will still make me feel okay.
I like watching, I mean, they're not weird ones, but if we're talking like franchise stuff, I like the ludicrous, Gerard Butler Secret Service.
Oh, something has fallen. Yeah, Angel has fallen.
Something has fallen movies. Because I think the third one is actually my favorite, because that's the one where the bad guys are private military contractors. So it's the most realistic.
That's the Angel has fallen, right?
I think that's the third one.
There's Olympus has fallen.
Because the second one
London
was
fallen.
The second one was the generic Hollywood racist Middle Eastern terrorists.
Yeah.
Bad guys. But the third one was like, oh, holy shit. actually doing the actual real world bad guys.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that one. That's a great, like, that's another thing that I can do, like, if I'm under
I think the I weather. Just I like those because whenever I'm watching them, it's usually in a state where I feel about as tired as Gerard Butler's constantly playing that character in those movies, so I feel simpatico with him.
Yeah. I get that. I mean, I think that's why I like old 70s and 80s cop movies where they're exhausted or angry beyond the point of no return, you know,
like a Popeye Doyle.
Yeah. Or like James Woods and Cop, like any of those kind of movies. I'm on board with because I'm also exhausted. So I get that. And there's comfort in relating to that, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know what the point of this bacon episode is. It's just
get your butt checked.
It's just content. Get your colonoscopy if you're a middle-aged person. They say 45 and over now, but all the doctors I talked to, I was like,
just to be safe, you should just start getting one once a week.
Yeah. And also check your own prostate. Put your finger up your ass and check it. Is it feel weird? You know? And if you don't know, you should do it more regularly so you know what your prostate feels like on the reg. Yeah, so do that. Shoot Nazis or not? Should they shoot?
No,
Nazis?
Yeah, you should always, punch, shoot, fight, ostracize,
do something violent to Nazis.
Yeah, Nazis are no good, and the ideology is not valid and has no place in the marketplace of ideas.
The not bacon episode that's been gestating all this time because we keep running into these, you know, personal troubles personal gains, you know, that take us away from each other, family obligations, work or whatever. But good goddamn, the episode I want to do is about vanquishing Nazis. Movies.
Ooh, that's
about
a good,
vanquishing
Nazis. That's a good one. All about, Nazis. Yeah.
But more importantly, like not like just about Nazis, because you could do Schindler's List, you could do Life is Beautiful or whatever. No, mine is like movies about vanquishing Nazis. Like you got Raiders of the Lost Ark, you got The Train, those kind of movies, like where it's about just Inglourious Basterds.
Yeah, well, both Inglourious Basterds.
More so the first one than the second one.
Yeah,
but both of them, like anything. Like that. Like,
it's explicitly plot. The plot is we are going to fight and fuck up Nazis.
Yeah. And what's bizarre is like if you research it, there aren't enough of those movies. There aren't enough. There's a lot of great ones. And it's a subgenre in of itself. But there's not enough. There's not enough. We need more. We need more vanquishing Nazi movies.
That's a good one. We should definitely do that as a full show.
Yeah. Next time, hopefully, Falk will be available and we can.
Yeah.
That said, what should people look for in the world of Skeleton? Should they look for any educational robots?
The robot's out.
It's
been launched.
Where can people get it?
You can get it at embodied.com. It's Moxie is the robot. You can check it out. But yeah, no, they're available.
And that's an educational robot that's geared towards children.
Yeah, it's for kids. It's not like a.
Will you be able to use the same technology to create a sex bot that people like me could enjoy?
Probably, but we're probably going to program it to reject you, just on general principle.
Why? Because I'm gross?
It's a little creepy, yeah. I think it'll be like, okay, yeah, you're a little too eager for the robot. Why don't you stick with Siri, buddy?
I'm too eager. That's the greatest thing I've ever heard. All right. Everybody, thank you for listening to the Film Pigs. I am Todd Anderson. And on behalf of myself and...
Stephen Skelton.
That's him. And Steve Falk, who had family obligations. Thank you very much for listening, and enjoy your comfort food. And remember, the pandemic is not over, and you should keep your fucking mask on your face.
Masks on, b-holes checked, punch Nazis.
Thank you very much. Well said.